You are listening to the For the Rose Tech Podcast, episode 265, Switch to Self-Driving Mode. Season 6, episode 265 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 22nd, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and a year older than he was last week is my brother James Furlough.
Yeah, I'm the big 3-3 now. Pretty crazy. Feels normal. It's alright.
11 times 3.
Yeah, that's right. Or 3 times 11, depending on how you do your math.
3 times 11, yes.
Yes.
Technically true.
yeah, so it's nice to be virtually with you.
Yes, right? it's true. If we sound weird...
You're so lifelike right now.
I know.
It feels like you're sitting right next to me.
Virtual reality has gotten quite good in the past couple of... The sound quality is better. We have directional sound.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. If I turn my head, it sounds like you stay in the same place when you talk.
Yeah, if I hit you... It looks like it hurts.
We've got haptic feedbacks in this simulation.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no controllers required.
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't figured it out yet, James and I are in the same room together.
Yeah, we decided that Matthew's new virtual reality headset needed to be experienced by more than one person to be able to fully explain it, so we'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Exactly. But the thing that I've been really excited about is that you've been talking about all your home automation setups that you've got.
True. Yeah.
And I finally got to experience them firsthand.
What do you think? Is it as amazing as I've built it up to be?
It's pretty cool. it's pretty cool. I could see getting into it. Like, it's like your door lock and the fact that, because I didn't really understand the entirety of the setup, so there's little details that I wasn't aware of, like the fact that it only replaces half of the deadbolt.
Mm-hmm.
So from the outside, it looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
The key still works.
Yep. I don't actually have a key, but I hear it works.
Yes. Okay. There we go. So and from the inside, like unlocking and locking it, I was at first, Diana and I were kind of like looking at it, like, what are we supposed to do here?
It's also 4 in the morning, which does not help.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It just turns out you just grab the entire thing and turn it.
Yes.
And it locks, which is pretty cool. It's the human user interface is quite.
Which was a requirement, since my wife can be a Luddite at times.
Yeah.
A little slow to adopt.
That's all right. Happens to the best of us.
No, but like,
but even you gave us a password, which I won't say right now, even though that was my first thought. But it's like, you know, there's a number pad, and you can put in the number, and it'll unlock it from the outside. So the only time you'd have a potential issue is if the battery on the lock went out.
Yes. But I get a warning way in advance.
Right, which is pretty nice, especially because it's like you got a... I think the ideal setup would be a battery connected to the house. So it would never die with a battery backup, because those are like the two use cases.
Yeah. The only thing that I wish it had in addition to that is, and this would maybe be in place of the keypad, would be some sort of... motion sensor on the door so I could knock out a pattern.
Now we know what it is.
and that would let me in.
You could do that.
I think there's other ones where they have that, which is awesome.
We could make that. You can make knock sensors with your Arduinos that pick up different patterns and stuff.
It's true. It's true.
Pretty.
It's a little, but I got a keypad, so I don't really care.
It's doable. so the other thing that, yeah, but the light switches are pretty nice. I'm intrigued by it. I'm a smart light sort of guy, not a smart light switch sort of guy. So I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, but they're pretty nice. They seem to work pretty well. And
if you're going to do your whole house, it's nice to have that option.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's to try to straddle the people who don't want to use their phone all the time Well, see, I may change my mind a lot once I have a watch and I can just shout out, "Hey Siri," and have it actually work for me.
Yeah.
Because then I'll be like, "Dude, light switches are so lame."
Yeah.
But the moment, they're good.
Yeah. Well, and the nice part about it is that, really and truly, the best part about it, and the thing that it fixes that my system doesn't fix, is that my system currently, with the smart lights, if they turn on for some reason, and they're just on, my roommates have no power to change the setting, except for to kill the power. And which is fine, but when I come back and they, quote, automatically turn on, they're not very on, and then I have to remember where the light switches are.
Yeah.
So I, you know, there's a distinct advantage to the idea of having a wall-facing, a wall-mounted light switch. Oh, it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic. I think both could have a space, and if you get the technology cheap enough, ideally you'd have them talking to each other. You'd have a light switch that controls outlets and light fixtures, and you'd have smart lights that can determine their own. Because the only thing that the light switch can do for you now is like lower the light, raise the light. Mine can do multicolor spectrum.
Ideally, like with your Philips light, they would come out with a light switch replacement.
Yeah.
That never actually cuts the power. The power's on the entire time for the light. And it's kind of just like a Wi-Fi thing telling your base to turn it off and on.
They actually have a neat little...
it's a dot, right? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, and you mount it to the wall and the buttons...
It's
the exact same idea, but it doesn't require any power. No batteries.
Yeah, which I originally was thinking about going down that route, but it just ultimately was...
Yeah.
Partially cost prohibitive, partially I'm going to have two light switches?
As the... Hue, it's not done yet. We're still working on it. But James, you want to know what? I'm going to be honest. We're not here to talk about how smart your house is, okay? Yeah, exactly. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure. He wants to share with everybody.
I founded and work for HPI, but I do not represent HPI or any of their opinions, good or bad.
Nice.
I also do not represent their announcement of laying off 4,000 people. So
it's kind of your fault.
It's not at all.
Well, you are a founder. I mean, don't you take any responsibility?
Buck stops at the founder, I guess.
Exactly. That's what I'm always saying. You created this idea, James. It's your responsibility.
It's all in service to the shareholders.
Exactly. That's got to be kind of weird to be laid off as a founder of your company.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
You say, well, you see, that's the thing. It doesn't happen all the time. It'd be a pretty good thing to be able to put on your resume. Well, not maybe on your resume, but it's a feather on your cap. I helped found this company. You can't fire me. This is what they did to Steve Jobs. You know what happened there?
Yeah.
Greatness.
Well, the company almost died.
Yeah, exactly.
Until they came back to help him out.
Exactly. So, what are you doing, HP? You're going to have to hire back 4,000 founders.
Not all of them are founders, I'm sure. It's been a year.
It's true. We've hired some people.
So long ago.
That we're about to fire. And that's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to follow us throughout the rest of the week, though, sometimes we post things to social media, and the social media sites that we post to, in particular, my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is nextwiggin4.
I am jamesfurlow.com on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Also, if you want to get anything more about this show, you can go to furlowbros.com. All the links and articles, clicks, videos, audio clips, all that good stuff is going to be at the website. So just go to furlowbros.com. If you don't want to go, but you want all that information, you're going to have to go at least once. But once you get there, you can sign up for our newsletter. And we'll deliver all that awesome information and nothing more yet to your email account. Actually, it's not true.
Can't give that kind of caveat. What is that? He has no idea what he's talking about. Yeah. I'm in charge of the account.
I'm just, that was a joke. I'm
Oh, man. All right. Anyways, so one of the other things or reasons, I guess, that you're here, besides wanting to visit with your... What is she, a niece? Is that the technical...
Yes, technically. The daughter of my brother is my niece.
Yes, yes. Oh, careful there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're hitting my... what would it be called? My ceremonial arrow. Bow and arrow. The thing's, I don't know, 5.5 feet tall. Anyways, so the other reason why you came was because, as anyone who listened to last week's show knows, you have a new Sony VR.
Yeah.
And so I got to play with it. I got to try it. I played Battlezone,
yes.
Right? Which is where you're in a tank and you're shooting up other tanks and flying vehicles, defending bases, that kind of stuff. I got to play 100-foot robots or robot 100-foot.
100-foot robot golf.
100-foot robot golf. You're playing golf. You're a robot.
about 100 feet tall.
Approximately. You can destroy buildings. And let's see. What else? I played. I feel like I've played more games than that. I did the office game. The job simulator. I was in an office. I turned on a computer and used it. And
it's a game that is not nearly as dumb and unexciting as it sounds.
Yeah, it's because everything is interactive.
Yeah.
And essentially you can throw everything, which is pretty fun. Let's see. Jessie played some games that are actually like multiple person stuff where she would see one thing through the VR headset. And then I would see something different. So, like, the example was this game, and she's a sheriff going into a saloon, and there's a bunch of different people there, characters, and I have a picture of, like, the bad guy that she's looking
for.
The
bandit, yeah.
The bandit, and so I will verbally describe it to her, and then she will shoot the correct person. If she shoots wrong, something bad happens. If she shoots right, it's good, it's all timed, it's a fun game. I'm trying to think. I watched a part of the Winnie the Pooh movie.
Yeah.
In VR, which was just like on a big wide screen.
So what's your overall impression? Is it the future of everything?
Yeah, so
that's a good enough answer.
Confession,
we can stop there.
So confession.
Okay.
I got motion sickness.
Yeah.
From it.
It's a bummer.
I know. It really is. And I got a So the tank game, I definitely got it, which I played yesterday, which, like, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah.
I really, like, you feel like you're sitting inside this tank.
Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed, so we also, we had some guys come over. One of them, listener of the podcast, friend, Mr. Dave, thanks for coming over, and his brother. And so they played it too, and one of the things that I noticed is that their heads did not move around nearly as much as mine.
Yeah.
I had like a bobblehead, apparently, and was constantly moving, constantly looking around. And I wonder if part of it's because they're just like, they play more video games.
Yeah.
So they're used to, like, I'm focusing on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
I can say, I know, I did notice that because it's, that I completely agree that. If you play a lot of video games, your head stays fixed staring at the screen. Your eyes do a lot of the walking
for you. Oh, it was shocking. Like, watching them, if you didn't know they were wearing a VR headset, you wouldn't question it.
Yeah, the camera never moved around. They weren't looking around.
So stable.
They say, in 100-foot robot golf, it was a different thing. They were very much looking around and seeing. But in the tank game, and there was two things that happened that they do in... that they do in Battlezone that I appreciate is inside the cockpit of the tank, they have a bunch of supplemental information screens that are around you that you have to look at in order to see that information. Kind of gets your neck used to moving around. And they have enemies that fly above you, and the only way to see them is to look up at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so once they got it, they looked around more, but it was very short glances. They were much more stable. And... yeah, I'm not sure. I know that there's a concern with the Sony PlayStation that there's a higher risk of motion sickness for it, and than the HTC and the Oculus, just because there are limitations to what they can do from a frame rate perspective and from from a stability of the head tracking perspective.
So
that being said, those are things they can work with in software, so hopefully it'll get better.
Yeah, and it's one of those where, like, it was fun enough where I'm like, man, if I could figure out a way to reduce that, I would.
Yeah.
I even now playing the 100-foot robot golf, I did that this morning. It was feeling good again. And now, even now, I'm kind of like, I feel it. You know, it's not bad. It's not debilitating. Though I am kind of like, I could go lay down and just rest for a bit and not feel like I'm in an ocean type of thing.
Interesting.
But what was interesting is I started the game standing up, because they make you do it where when you're on the starting screen, there's like a bench that's there, and you literally can't see the instructions if you're sitting.
Yeah.
And so you have to stand up. And so, which I think they quasi-do on purpose. So you stand up, and you're like, you know, if you're playing golf, sure, I get it. So I stood up, got the instructions, and then you just stay standing. And very quickly, the guy starts jumping, and like, so your robot, you hit the golf ball, and then you have to go actually follow the golf ball. It doesn't just set you up next to it again, normal golf games, and that's part of the fun of it. And the thing takes off, and it moves, and I had a couple of those, like, whoa, like, my eyes and my body are not telling me the same thing right now.
That's funny.
This is whoa. And I felt that, it's hard to describe, but like, it's the falling feeling, you know, where you get the tinglies and like, you just like, I don't know, I felt it. And that was, I instantly went, great, I'm going to be sick.
Yeah.
I mean, I played for another hour. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And but I sat down after that, because I was like, you know what, I cannot, if I keep standing here, I'm going to fall over.
That is a huge challenge with VR, is that idea that as even the best systems, if a game is designed specifically to induce motion sickness, it's pretty easy to. I personally think that we're going to develop, like, if you play it long enough and you play it when you're young, I think you'll just develop your brain will figure out that, oh, this is different. When I've got a headset on, when this is VR, and your brain will just figure out how to deal with motion sickness, I think. That would be my suspicion. We'll see if if that's not the case.
Yeah,
but
I don't know. I mean, some of it just feels so primal, but maybe not. Maybe just, or maybe you have the feeling and you just get used to it.
Well, yeah, your brain will just rewire to
like eat this hot sauce, right?
Yeah, that's a good example. It might be for some people that it's impossible to get over it, but they claim that motion sickness is born out of the disassociation between what your ears feel and what your eyes see.
Mm-hmm.
Your ears are telling you all sorts of positional information that is completely out of sync of what your eyes are seeing, and it's the difference in expectation is what mm-hmm. what causes a nauseating feeling. Well, if your brain gets trained to the idea that when I have a VR headset, expect a discrepancy there, your brain might just be able to deal with that. I don't know if that's true, but that's my suspicion.
Or they figure out how to check your ears while you're at it.
That's actually one of the things that's one of the things they're working on, is because it's a lot easier to trick the ears into thinking you're accelerating than it is to actually put you in an acceleration chamber.
Huh, interesting. I could get behind that. And one of the guys, they played the Valkyrie demo. And
You're in a spaceship, like a space starfighter, so you're going around on three axes.
Yeah, and he was spinning around and doing stuff. And I mean, on one level, I was like, that looks awesome, and I would love to try it on the VR headset. On another level, like, I was pretty sure I would throw up on the spot. I was just like, ugh.
Well, the worst thing that I did, I was really impressed that Dave didn't get messed up by this, but I started fiddling with the camera at one point while he had the headset on. Thankfully, he was in a static room. There wasn't anything going on. But that's, like, the big no-no is if you don't move the camera, don't start, like, just jerking around. Because the camera is, for those who don't understand what that does, the camera is watching the headset for these different LED indicators. So if you move the camera, it's like you moved in person. And so your whole world shifts around you.
So that's like two levels of dissociation.
Yeah, and it was pretty rough. And I, like, at one point I was like, I dropped the camera and I was like, close your eyes. Just I'll tell you when to open your eyes. This is going to be a little bit rough for a while.
Well, it's funny in the robot golf game, too. When I was done playing, I would actually close my eyes during the scene transition.
It's
just even that change of, which I noticed in Battlefield, right?
So Battlefront?
Battlefront, they never did any cutaways. You
right.
were all, well, yeah, even you were always sitting in your machine.
Yeah, you'd be inside the cockpit of the tank, and the windows would have shades that come up and close, and then they would reopen, and you'd be in a new zone.
And even at the end of it, when you were selecting the next level to play, you were still sitting inside the cockpit. Right. So that was something that they never changed, and I think that was purposeful, because in the golf game, when it would switch to the, here are your results, and here's how you did, that I, like I said, I had to close my eyes.
Interesting.
Because even that was enough where I was like, whoa, this is throwing me off.
I know, and I know that they would do, like, that one of the things they would do is when they would come up with menus, they would fade in a menu that would stay, that would, like, float in front of you. And that was one technique, but I evidently haven't played enough. You know, it's funny, I don't get the motion sickness, so I don't think about it as much.
Yeah, no, it's fun to think about. There's all these subtleties that gamers are going to figure out.
Yeah,
and they're going to learn to, oh, we can't. Yeah. We have to have something persistent the entire time. We can't just jerk them around because they feel like they're there. Because I mean, like, I even got to the point where I was like, I don't even like the black because you're just staring out at nothing. You're like, where am I? So yeah, there's some things they're going to figure out, and they're going to figure it out for me,
right?
Because I mean, I don't think I'm in the minority. You hear enough talk about people who get motion sickness.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely an issue.
But if they can solve it for me, because mine's not bad, and I feel like there's probably half a dozen things that they need to tweak or change, and I'll go, okay, I'm good.
I think the big question will be, how do you do it on a system-wide scale so that... because right now, a lot of the responsibility is being put on the handle on the developers. But that's going to hurt Sony if developers don't get on board. So how does Sony make sure that these games are designed in such a way that they reduce motion sickness as much as possible, so that the most number of games are available to the most number of people? And the nice part about that is once you have this system-wide. Things in check. Once one company kind of figures it out, those will become what's the word I'm looking for?
Standard practice.
Yeah, standard practices for other companies as well. And
totally,
it's all a solvable problem, James. It's pretty exciting.
Before we jump to the next story, I did want to share. I saw this report. That was a visual history of virtual reality headsets.
Okay.
So go to furlerbros.com/. What are we, 265?
Yeah,
furlerbros.com/265. Click on the visual history link. You can see a bunch of them, but I'll just show you what some of them. And I love their sub-headline. It's not always pretty. But this first one is this 90s one where this guy is wearing... it's the size of a bread machine.
Oh, yeah, that's enormous.
It's so, so big. But everyone's smiling and happy. Like, this is pretty awesome. There's another one that they did in 1992. They were doing virtual ski slopes. The guy's literally wearing... looks like the poles are connected to some sort of sensors on the ground. He's literally strapped into shoes and has a virtual reality mask on.
Yeah.
Like, yes! And some huge CRT monitors all around as well. Oh, I love it. There was some... there's another one where, and I think this is a brilliant idea, actually. There's a dentist working on a guy, and the patient is wearing some VR goggles.
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Bring it
you
on.
You don't have to just stare up at the light while they chip away at your teeth.
Yeah, exactly. In 1999, in Beijing, they had a computer exposition. What is it? Exhibition. Anyways, they all look like they're wearing like Geordi LaForge glasses.
Yeah.
Which, that's sweet. Let's get there quick.
I know.
I can get behind that. It looks reasonable. There's another one. It was in 1997. It was a VR simulator called Percival. That was for the National Equestrian School. And so it was literally this guy wearing a VR headset on top of like a fake horse learning how to ride.
Interesting.
Yeah. Love it. Another one, which this is like... I would call it like pre-AR in a way. So this guy, this is again in 1997, he's wearing his VR headset, and then he has a sensor that it puts over over an object so he can read the ingredients on it, which...
It seems real dumb.
I don't totally get the point of it. But I'm like, alright. Like I said, it feels like it's like a pre-AR type of set. I don't know. Anyways, there's some other ones. Toshiba had kind of a fun one where literally, how would you describe this? It looks like it's like a domed like skylight.
Yeah, it's like you put your whole head
on top
in
of this person's. Like imagine like a spacesuit, you know, the globe that you wear for a spacesuit.
Yeah,
but 2 to 3 times bigger than it should be.
That's funny.
Oh, I love it. And then there's a few others. They got cardboard there. They've got people wearing the ones where it's got like the phones.
The Galaxy Gear.
The Galaxy Gear. Yeah, I guess that is the Samsung non-exploding Galaxy Gear. Some world leaders and policymakers at Davos, Switzerland. We should go to that. That was this year. And then it also shows... I thought this was interesting. It's an Oculus Rift at a museum. Essentially, as if you're going through a museum looking at photos of things.
Okay.
You're just sitting there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Some more of the guys wearing skateboards with VR on. That seems... I love the idea. Again, I'm like, apparently I get too sick for it, so there's that. But I love the concept of... Give me something more than just the headset.
That's especially dumb because the Galaxy VR, like, if you were to crunch down, the camera wouldn't follow you. That only gives you rotational information. So that's... I don't get what they're doing, but whatever. Yeah.
Anyways, that's just a visual history of some of the places we've done.
That's interesting.
Done. Yeah, pretty cool. So VR, in some ways, is still very nascent, which, like, of course.
It's true. Yeah, speaking of the Samsung Galaxy, though, I just learned a new feature on Google Documents.
Yeah.
So we in our document we have little like headers that we put in. We didn't set them up as headers though. Did you know that it does that?
Huh. No.
It auto detects headers in your document, and when you scroll, it'll separate them all out. That's really cool. The more you know, James. The more you know. That has nothing to do with it. So this is the headline. So last week we brought to you what we thought was going to be the last Samsung exploding phone update. And one of them was that the FAA had finally announced that you weren't allowed to bring your Samsung Galaxy Note 7s onto airplanes anymore.
Aeroplanes.
And the reason why is because explosives are illegal to bring on airplanes. So obviously you can't bring the Galaxy. And they're literally making people throw them away at security checks. So you have your $800 phone, you try to go through security, and they say, sorry, you can't bring that phone. You have a choice, you can either leave it behind or throw it away. And so people were throwing away their phones. Samsung, trying to mediate the disaster that is, decided to set up stations outside in really busy hubs. This isn't at all airports, but in really busy hubs in America, they set up desks, whereas you're going to security, you can literally walk up, hand them a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, and they will hand you a new phone. And it's they're cheap phones. They're not.
So they're just they're holding it for you temporarily. So like,
no,
when you come back. Oh,
they're giving you a new phone.
Okay,
it is
this
not
is
a,
your
it's
phone,
a
new SIM.
Yeah, this is well, okay. This is the theory. You're about to get on a plane. You don't have another phone, and they're going to make you throw away your Galaxy.
Totally.
So instead of not having a phone, here's a new Galaxy phone. And...
Oh, they're giving them Galaxy.
No, sorry. Not Galaxy phones. Here's a new, cheaper, older version of ours. Here's,
you have them as that. Why don't you give them like a flagship of another...
Because they don't want it to be... I think it's one of those things where the logic of it is, look, we don't want this to be abused. We want people to return the phones. We want people to go through the normal... the normal process. But at the same time, it's a real disaster if people are just throwing away their $800 phones. And it's still a disaster, but it's a slightly smaller disaster if we give them a $400 phone when they...
At least they can use it while they're there.
Exactly. So,
wow.
I don't know. Yeah, just, okay. I love it. Well, this is, but it's interesting because we said what's going to be fun to watch with this for the next couple of years, or for the next year, next couple of years, is going to be not the fallout from it, but how a company that has an enormous PR disaster deals with it. And this is the first step. It's the, how do you just make it right for your customers? Do your best.
I get it.
And, yeah, so.
They're working it. Poor Samsung.
I know.
There's some new rules coming down the pipe, too, as a result of this.
Mm-hmm.
Some new testing policy procedure, which... It's an exploding phone, so that's okay.
Yeah, it's not like this isn't... This is the sort of thing that even the most extreme of libertarians might go, well, you know, okay.
Bombs are bad, we'll admit it.
Yeah, especially on airplanes. this is a complete side note, but somebody made a game mod for the for Grand Theft Auto 4 yes. or 5, and where you'd have a Samsung phone, and basically it's just a grenade that they reskinned as a Samsung Galaxy phone, so you throw it and it explodes like a grenade, and they put the video on YouTube, and Samsung got real mad about it, so they contacted YouTube and got it pulled from YouTube.
Awesome.
I know.
All right. I saw there was this other Twitter thing again, just how creative people can be. This guy reposted, he goes, I am not endorsing either candidate, he goes, I'm just endorsing the creativity and the time that someone took to put this gift together. And it's like Trump is like picking up some kid and they superimposed Hillary's smiling face on top of it. You're just like, this is goofy and funny. And it's just, I love the internet.
Yeah, I know.
There's all you need is that one person with way too much time on their hands to bring joy to millions of lives.
Well, the amazing part to it for me is with a lot of this stuff is that, like, if you know what you're doing, it's not even that much time. You just have the skill and the idea.
So true.
And all of a sudden you can be internet famous.
Oh my gosh, software, it's amazing. This is why it's eating the world.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Or maybe I should say, that's why it's driving us to new levels.
That's better than mine. I was going to go with eating the road, which doesn't really make sense.
No, not totally.
Yeah, but it's... The long and short of it is we're ready to start talking about Tesla.
Tesla! Changing the world.
Yeah, so Tesla made kind of a... They had been teasing an announcement for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it would... I was just like... Every once in a while, Tesla does this. They'll tease an announcement for a while. And then you'll get to the announcement. And I'd say probably one out of every four we actually talk about on the show. Like, a lot of times they're just... And we've got a new feature that's pretty neat if you already own one.
We can change the batteries really fast.
Yeah.
It's already built in.
If you're about to buy a new Tesla, we've got this cool new feature. And that...
Isn't that kind of neat that... Cars are just complicated enough that they can have things that they've been building in for a while and then tell you about it and go, and P.S., we've been selling it this way for the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And we just got to flip a switch now. I'm just like, that's kind of cool. That it's not even like, and it's on sale next Friday. It's like, you've already bought it.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of what...
like, you can't get away with that on a phone.
Well, see, that's not true, though. I mean, like...
It's totally true.
It's because I was about to say, that reminds me of what Apple has done, where they'll build in hardware things that people, like, and this is the difference. When Apple adds a new piece of hardware that's clearly meant to be some part of some new software package, like, let's say they wanted to build in a depth-sensing camera into every iPhone, even though they don't have the full package of AR software ready to go, they have to give it some feature, some justification for having dual lenses.
Yes.
And which is what they did with the bokeh effect.
Yeah.
Like, the intention of this camera is to to make it reverse compatible when they come out with AR software.
Like, that was an obvious one.
Yeah.
And people, we know it, we just aren't totally sure what they're going to do first.
Right.
Whereas with the Tesla stuff, you're like, oh.
Well, and see, this is
maybe
the
we're just not in the car loop.
No,
the car drivers are all over it.
I pay attention to this. I think that's the reason why they made the announcement that they made here, is because they are going to make some pretty significant changes to what is inside the car.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, they just announced that they are going to be launching a fully featured self-driving mode.
Level 5.
Yeah. It's the cars will do their own thing. And it requires a special hardware setup. So the reason why they wanted to announce it was twofold, to say, one, A, it's coming, and B, from here on out, every Tesla is going to have it. The hardware built in.
Sweet.
Now, that doesn't mean you'll be able
to pay extra to turn it on.
Like, yes.
Currently, of course.
It's an $8,000 software package if you...
Why would you buy a Tesla without that?
Because you get to save $8,000.
Nah, that's not a good enough reason.
Well, honestly, the thing is, if you're going to buy, like, let's say you're going to buy a Model X with the dual drive.
Model X and all that, like, it's no... Model 3, like, okay, we pushed the budget for $30,000.
That's what my point was going to be, is that that at the high end, yes, $8,000, like, you can buy a $120,000 Model SD, right? The dual motors, it's an amazing car. $8,000 extra for a... You either have $120,000 in the bank, in which case more ain't that big of a deal, or you took out a big loan for it.
Or it is a big deal and you shouldn't be buying that car.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas at a $30,000, there's a lot of people that can afford $30,000 that can't afford $40,000.
Oh, yeah, that's almost, a 20% increase.
Yeah, something like that. And
I gotta do my math real quick.
What you end up with is this. It is a big savings to not have that. That being said,
26%.
Thank you. That being said, I would certainly do my best to find $8,000 in my couch, especially because upgrading the software later is a $10,000 package. It's only $8,000 if you buy it new.
You're then you're saving money.
I that's just good finances.
Yeah. That's just. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's all right. Well, I get it. Makes sense. But they're building that into everything. Model 3 gets it.
The hardware is there, and the justification. I know a lot of people on Reddit are complaining about the idea of it's like downloadable content. This is what made video games terrible. And you're like, except that's how all specialized software. Like, you buy an iPhone, and Google sell like, and it comes with a bunch of different pieces of software. But if you wanted a more sophisticated piece of software, like a movie maker or something, software, you buy that software. You buy a Windows machine with Windows on it that doesn't come with Word. Like, maybe you feel like it should, but just, you know, you have to think about it in the context of, like, no, this is the software.
That's what ruined Windows. That's...
Yeah, that's...
Everything should be free all the time.
That's why... Yeah, you're right. That's why Windows is failing. Oh, wait.
Well, and the interesting part about it, and I think you're going to talk about it a little bit later, is Tesla personally has an incentive to put it on every single car, because even though you may not use it,
yes,
they will.
Yeah.
Which is smart. And I think that's actually something... So specifically, they're talking about... What do they call it? It's a Shadow Warrior mode.
Exactly.
Shadow Ninja. So Shadow Mode, where essentially it's not driving the car, but it's pretending that it would be, and tracking all the information. And I'm presuming there's some sort of opt-in, opt-out, whatever, form where Tesla gets it, probably from a large majority of people. And then they can use all that to analyze it. So it's going to be...
Do you think there's an opt-in, opt-out?
Oh, yeah.
You think?
Legally, there is somewhere.
Well, but I mean, maybe the legally is, yeah, you paid $8,000, and one of the stipulations is that...
No. I mean, you see it, like, with Apple's stuff all the
time. Oh, yeah, that's right, because you haven't paid for... Yeah. I'm being dumb. Of course. I'm like, you bought the autopilot. Why doesn't it... Or the self-driving mode. Why would you have to... Why couldn't they just be, like... The stipulation of buying... Yeah, you're right. Could they... Okay, wait.
Well, I guess it's... I'm trying to think, like, with
Could
Google,
they put a
right?
user
like, they
agreement...
They don't really ever ask much.
Right.
They just are tracking your searches. Though I think there's an option. No, I take that back. There's an option to turn that off, even in Google searches.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hidden, but
it's true. I wonder if they. Yeah, I wonder if their whole thing is like when you sign your contract to buy the car, part of that contract is. Yeah, we're gonna lie.
And you probably have to submit a separate form somewhere.
Yeah.
In order to opt out.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's close to 100%, and honestly, who cares?
Yeah.
And
well, I care because I just want to know how to get people's data. I want to when I'm in that position, how do I?
Yeah, take right up until they have a first driving breach of driver data. But again, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Because like, how do they know you're not going where you're supposed to be going? Because that would be it. Anyways, actually, it would be. Are they selling it to say like to the like cops?
Yeah, that's. I was going to say that's.
We recorded your speed a little high.
Well, or
insurance.
We think you're a terrorist. We'd like to know what your location's been.
That's interesting.
Which there's so many ways. Honestly, this is the scary part. They don't need that information. They just use. There's so many traffic cameras now. They know where you are.
Yeah, that's true. And you got your phone, anyways. Anyways, the point being that Tesla is going to use it to improve their smart driving. Artificially intelligent car, because they can aggregate all that data together to feed it information about here's how a human drives in this situation, here's not what one human did, here's what 10,000 humans did, and the computer can go, oh, here's the optimal route. It's almost like you're crowdsourcing each individual driving decision, which is genuinely different than how
Google.
They're not doing it. Then how Google is going about it, because it's slightly different. But anyways, I think it's smart, and it's a good way for them to collect a lot of data really quick without having to even. Because I think they were talking about how they can test some new feature and say we would have the car do. I'm trying to think. Okay, if it's a red light, you're turning left, but it's onto a one-way street. Depending on where you live, like you can go even if it's red because it's one way.
Right.
And maybe that's something where they're like, well, we don't feel comfortable yet to turn that on. But what they can do is create simulations of the car approaching that situation, and then train the computer to say to do something, and then test it against actual human behavior. And again, not just one, maybe against thousands of different choices that humans make, and go, oh, it did what everyone else would do.
Right.
Cool. It's good enough. Roll it out.
And the other, yeah, and there's another feature that I think is really something that they want to be able to say, because part of part of Musk's value proposition here is that it's not perfect. People are going to die while the car is driving itself. Like, he doesn't say that, but that's what he believes. He says it in many more words.
Yes.
Doesn't put quite such a fine point on it, but his larger issue is that he believes that even though people will die as a result of problems with the Tesla system, that overall lives are saved. That overall the car will do a better decision. But how do you prove that? The only way to prove that is to just look at statistically miles driven. How many deaths per mile are there? And if there's less for the Tesla than for the self-driving cars, then it's de facto safer, is the argument you would make. Well, now what they're saying is, they're like, well, actually, we'll record all this data, and we will have the car making all sorts of. We'll have the car driving itself in the background,
yeah,
in the shadow. And if there's an accident, we can literally look at that data later and then say, would the car have made the same decision in that sort of situation? And if it had made a different decision, would your life have been saved? They can answer that question concretely. Every single time, is our system safer? And that's one of the big reasons why they want to use it, that's one of the big PR reasons that they want to use it.
Fair enough.
Because from a developing the software perspective, having all that data, knowing it's exactly what the car would see if it was driving, and they can look at it all from that perspective. And I think what you're going to end up finding is, yeah, it's going to be unfair in the computer's favor of how much safer it is.
Depends on what articles you read, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that his other criticism?
Yeah. So this was really interesting. He actually had a bit of a a lash out at the media. Tirade, yeah. at the media, basically saying, you're killing people. You're murderers.
Oh, my gosh.
Once again, he didn't put that fine of a point on it. But nearly, he came out and said that he believes that articles that are written that focus on the occasional death in a self-driving car or the occasional self-driving car accident, that those sorts of articles blow them out of proportion and make self-driving cars seem more dangerous than they are, which is terrible when they're a lot safer than human-driven cars. It results in people relying on their car instead of self-driving cars, and when the self-driving cars are safer. And so he's making the moral argument that that sort of thing is killing people.
Yeah.
And it's hard to argue with that, James. Actually, I mean, it's not hard to argue with that. It's an interesting position. Obviously, it hurts his business proposition, so... And since it hurts his business, it takes him one step further from going to Mars. But he it's a tough one.
I get it, right? You don't want to make people afraid of it because you're focusing on just a couple bad things instead of focusing on all the good things. I actually don't think they're totally biased on the bad stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some questioning for sure. I just think he's maybe super sensitive.
I think he's super sensitive because it's, well, especially whenever you have a nascent technology, it's really the incumbent always has an advantage in every yeah. PR campaign, whether it's politics or food processing. This idea that we are willing to stick with what's horrible because the alternative isn't perfect. We're not willing to take steps forward. Frequently, we're not willing to take steps forward and say, well, this is a big change, it'll be uncomfortable, but it's much better than the current situation because, well, why can't we have a perfect situation? Like, the idea that we're going to wait until nobody ever dies as a result of self-driving cars before we switch over is nuts.
Yeah.
And if your goal is to build a safer system... And it's even crazier if your goal is to say, look, I'm trying, kind of a bad driver. Sometimes I do things that I shouldn't. And a perfect example, we drove up to Oregon on Friday. We left my work.
Actually, you drove up on Thursday.
Thank you.
Wow.
Well, see, that's the problem. We started Thursday afternoon. We didn't finish until Friday at 4 a.m. Yeah. And although I was using an obscene amount of caffeine to make sure that I was on my A game, there's no way I was actually on my A game, whereas a self-driving car would have been. And
yeah.
And I think that if you could have a self-driving car doing its thing, like it's really easy to say, look, I don't want to drive in that sort of situation. I want the car to drive.
Yeah.
And as long as it's as safe as I am, that seems pretty good, you know, because I know how safe I can be. I'm not perfect. I get where Tesla's or where Elon's coming from, especially because there's so much interest from the government.
But it's hard when it's like, yeah, today it's maybe only slightly better, but the only way it's going to get significantly better is if we start using it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's like if we just keep it in a lab the entire time, maybe we'll never actually know.
And there's real danger of the federal government and the state government stepping in and saying, whoa, 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 we want to figure this out before we implement it. And then all of a sudden, you're set back, in his view, 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, as you're trying to get the government on board. And his fear is right now the government is going along with it, is supporting it, is advocating it, is saying, you know, let's take reasonable precautions and make sure that the people at fault are held responsible. But, you know, for the most part, they're letting the tech companies do what they need to do to get it done.
Yeah.
But it would only take a couple of months and some really, like, bad press to change that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's afraid of. I think that's what he's... I think it's a real dangerous thing to attack the media because... if you upset them and their sensibilities and tell them they're doing their job wrong and they're murdering people, they might come back and say, oh yeah, you know, we'll double down because we think you're trying to hide something or we think you're being dangerous, you know, it's... Mm.
Yeah, I think enough... I don't think reporters are trying to get after him, so that probably won't be the reaction.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a risk.
Yeah, and I just...
If you had someone like Larry Ellison from Oracle saying that,
yeah,
then you'd have a bunch of people be like, oh, really?
Exactly. and I think the interesting thing to me is that this idea of... It's not confirmation bias, it's rarity bias? Is that what it... There's a bias...
I don't know.
That is related to things that are rare. People are more afraid of flying. The theory goes that people are afraid of flying, not because it's more dangerous. It's actually much more safe than driving for most, you know,
yeah,
statistically speaking. But when there's an accident, it's so rare that it gets really blown up in news media, and so we're more afraid of it. Sharks aren't dangerous, which actually... makes it that much more incredible when somebody gets attacked by a shark, everybody pays attention to it, which makes it seem more dangerous than your bathroom tub, which is horrifyingly dangerous. Tons of people die in bathroom tubs all the time. And that's sort of and that's the bias he wants to avoid. Because he's literally saying, look, deaths will be more rare with our cars, which will make them more novel and more newsworthy, which will make people more afraid of them, even though that's a direct result of the fact that they're actually safer. Which is kind of a weird, you know, yeah, if you could stop that, stop that early on.
Yeah.
But...
Huh.
Yeah, so this is the... I know that they had a video... available. Did you watch it?
I did. Did you watch it?
I think I skipped around in it.
Okay, yeah, so essentially it feels like a concept video that's not a concept video.
Yeah, it's an actual thing.
I think so. I'm not sure. I mean, it's clearly staged. Clearly staged.
Yeah.
But I think it's real. And it's essentially this guy who you're kind of looking over his shoulder and the Tesla's driving itself and it takes off from just like a normal in a parking lot, goes down a regular street, makes a couple turns, gets onto the freeway, gets off the freeway, eventually drops this person off in front of a building, and then goes and parks itself and ultimately looks for a spot in the parking lot. There is none, and parallel parks out on the street.
Yeah.
And again, you can tell at least the parking lot part of it clearly staged. And then it's kind of cool because it shows you a bunch of the different, I think there's like 8 cameras that are being added to it or put onto a Tesla or something, and it shows you what that camera's seeing every once in a while. And so it's kind of flipping between them. I don't know, that's interesting. And it's kind of their way of saying, see, here's where we're going. And that's exciting.
It's a self-driving car.
Yeah, like, oh, I want one. And it's cool. I mean, it's also clear to me that there's parts of the video that they sped up. Because like when the guy gets out of the car and starts walking away, like he's booking it. And it looks like they sped up the video.
Well, the whole drive to the office was sped up. I skipped around it, but that was clear to me that like as soon as I saw it, like he was taking turns really. The car was taking turns really fast, and the guy wasn't like being thrown into the corner. So it was,
yeah, okay, all right. So yeah, so they sped the whole thing up, which I think it was just to compress it down to a 3-minute video.
Yeah,
but it also you're like, okay.
Well, this is
the cooler when it's fast.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. That I've heard reviews of. They're like one of the things that it does is that it skips a handicap parking spot, which is an important thing for it to be able to do. It can identify what's a handicap parking spot. I know that like
it doesn't hit the person who walks by.
That which is pretty good.
Yeah.
The doors open and close automatically, the front doors, which is a change, because that wasn't the case. Most of these doors are you have to open them yourselves. So. People are kind of wondering, why are you doing this? That's another thing that can break now. And they were coming out and basically saying, look, the car can drive itself. Do you really want just anybody to open up and get in? Or do you want it to have to identify the person and then open the door for them? Like, these things need to be able to... Nobody's in the car to protect the car. It has to be able to protect itself. Which is an interesting thing that... You know, I've never thought about before, but I guess, I mean, it makes sense.
Sure. Plus, it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a very cool video. It's a very cool feature.
Straight.
But
yeah, cool video. I like it. Let's see. If you wanted to watch that video, where do you think someone could go to watch that video? Treats it like a political ad.
They could go to their email account where they've signed up for the Furlough Bros Weekly.
Oh, yeah. Email account? Furlough Bros Weekly?
No.
What are you talking about? They just go to furloughbros.com.
Okay, fine.
You did it wrong. /256.
You're
horrible.
I was going to advocate for the newsletter.
Well, yeah, they got to do that too. But
yeah, okay. Go to Furlough Bros. Yeah, the video's there.
Where's that video at again?
Furloughbros.com.
/256? What?
Yeah. Or just the main splash page if you're listening this week.
Yeah, I would just do.
And then also this. So one of the big questions that people came up with, because this is going to sound
also this.
It's going to this because this is
this just
wait, 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 wait. So this is the deal. You drop your car drops you off at work, and then it goes parks itself.
Yeah,
which is pretty lame. Very expensive car just sitting there, getting sun damage.
So lame.
What if we wanted to earn money for us? What if we wanted to join Uber?
Yeah.
While we're at work.
That makes sense. Uber's just working on self-driving cars. That seems like a marriage made in heaven.
Exactly. Especially since it's like being able to, you know, what if you wanted the car to go pick up your kids or your wife or somebody else?
Yeah.
Seems like a pretty reasonable proposition.
Yeah.
Tesla has already said, nope, can't do that. Can't make money with it.
Can they control that?
I don't know how they control it. They are starting what they call the Tesla Network.
Yeah.
Which is a... Exactly that. It's a self-driving car network for making money, but they don't want Uber competing with them. I don't know how they control that or what the deal is. Because you would think Uber could just be like, "Give us your credentials and we'll make it happen."
And Uber's the kind of company where they'll go around it. They don't really care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. You know. I guess they had to come out on record saying, "Don't do it."
Yeah.
I mean, HP says don't use non-HP ink. So, I mean, that's our recommendation, right?
Yeah.
We'll avoid your warranty if you don't use one of our cartridges.
That's really funny you'd bring that up, because Apple is suing Amazon right now, since they're like 90% of all accessories are dangerous to your phone, which is basically saying they don't actually have the made for iPhone certification.
Uh-huh.
They work fine. There's no problem with them.
Yeah.
They just haven't paid Apple yet, and they're ripping off Apple's IP because they're made in China, and China doesn't care. And Amazon's making money off of it, so Apple tried to sue Amazon, and everybody's like, "Dude, not cool." And
that's Tesla's going down that route.
Exactly.
HP tried to go down that route and then got slapped down by the courts. Yeah. So.
Curie, you hear the deal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I don't think it'll last. I think it'll become a...
It'll be an official stance that they never really police.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then the last piece of this was we also found out this week that at the beginning of the week, this is only tangentially related, Apple isn't building cars anymore.
Hey, shocker!
I know. Well, it's shocking if you don't listen to this show, so it's not shocking for the people listening to this show, but because I've literally said since the day everybody started talking about this, yeah, they're building a car. They're never going to sell a car, and they stopped building cars because they're never going to sell a car. Bob Mansfield took over, and they're going to be building software. The only question that anybody's asking is it self-driving car software, or is it just infotainment, like improve the human user interface of your car type stuff? Which, it's funny because nobody's actually saying, not nobody, but like most people are like, well, obviously it just means that they're focusing on the self-driving car software. I'm like, why would it be obvious? What about Apple would ever make that obvious? That they're going to get into, they're going to go toe-to-toe with Tesla and Google and all the other car manufacturers who are trying to build out these self-driving software solutions, and Apple's going to go in and somehow beat that? Like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem...
It makes a lot more sense for them to double down on the infotainment and to say, yeah, use Tesla's self-driving and Google's self-driving stuff, no big deal.
Right.
But you're now going to have a bunch of free time on your hands. about that app store?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That makes a lot more sense. How do you... Yeah. How do you... Because it's like, they're obviously moving forward with the... How do we become the hub for home? The Internet of Things for your home.
Yeah, become the hub for your...
Your car.
Your car, where you've got some sort of Apple TV-esque type of thing in your car,
yeah.
So it knows where you're at. It, when you step inside the car with your phone, it knows that it's you who just stepped inside.
Knows
the continuity, you know, that kind
right.
of play.
It knows where you left off on your movie that you're going to get into your car and keep watching because the car is driving for you. To me, I think that's the route they're going down.
Sense.
I don't.
And they're going to play with the music and the speakers,
yeah.
and the different touch panels and different sensors inside the car, sure,
yeah.
but
there's
I don't know. The giant thing doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And you can attach a lot of that to hardware, like you said. You
it doesn't
know,
require any AI machine learning either.
Right. Which, they're going down that route. They're getting better at it. They're going to try to get better at it, but that doesn't mean they're good at it right now, or there's any reason to expect that something as complicated and dangerous
as... Well, I understand that they don't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
To own inside your car.
Yeah.
And it... Yeah.
So,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I would be very interesting to have been a fly on the wall with Bob Mansfield, because clearly they went, something's not working, it's not right, we need you to come in and take a look at it. And to have him just start learning, because pretty quickly after he took over, it was like, and we're done.
Yeah, when you say pretty quickly, I mean, like, it was like 9 business days. I mean, it was Bob Mansfield came in, and things started to change. People were getting fired, and it's been like 2 months, which is only like 40 business days. You've only gone to work 40 times, and he's basically canceled your project.
Yeah, I just, like, could you imagine some of those meetings that he was in where he just goes, oh my, this is worse than we thought. And he starts sharing it with Tim Cook and the others, and he's like, guys, this is a money pit. I think we have one or two useful things, but this is not worth continuing forward.
Yeah.
So, hey, you know what? They got to be proud of the things they say no to.
Yeah, which...
And maybe that happens all the time, and we just don't know about it, but because it's self-driving cars, and they had to have a bigger space for it...
Say, you know what? I honestly believe that what happened was... They thought
it happens with Google all the time.
Right. Well, it does. Yeah, exactly. I think what happened was when they first came up with the iPhone, I don't know if you remember this story, but when Apple first announced it, they were talking about, they had a meeting where they came up with a bunch of ideas to work on. And one of them was like a wristband health tracker, like a watch.
Yeah.
One of them was the iPhone. One of them was a car. One of them was a TV. Like
one of them
long,
was a tablet.
Yeah, exactly. There was that's right. There was a long list of things that they thought they could improve with their technology. And a car was one of the was on that list. And they've tried pretty much everything else, and they've come out with a product. Well, okay. They decided to go down the car route. And like you said, because building a car is an expensive and space-consuming endeavor, I think it became very high-profile because it was hard to hide it and to hide what they were doing behind the curtains of their main campus.
Yeah.
They had to build new buildings. They had to start new escrow companies to go
it's
through.
It's just kind of crazy thinking about they had that much money to run an experiment of that scale.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you think about Elon Musk with SpaceX, that was essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know if this is going to work, but what the heck?
Yeah, let's try it. And, then to just have it all kind of crumble. Like, well, not crumble, but, yeah, I guess if you're...
It happens.
If that was your job and you were a manager there, it would feel like crumbling.
That's horrible.
To have Bob Mansfield just come in and just be like, boom. You know, no, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And this isn't very Apple-y, guys.
Happens.
Yeah, it does. It's good. But you don't want to know what?
It's time to switch topics.
Yes, it is. Let's move on from there, but bring along the core of what made that topic interesting with us wherever we're going. That was a strained... Let me just explain myself.
I'll roll with it.
So the Nintendo Switch.
Nintendo! It's back!
We knew that the Nintendo NX was the next generation console.
Yep.
They announced that like way before the Wii U. like they should have, but everybody was like, oh my gosh, you're going to hurt Wii U sales. And then everybody remembered that there are no Wii U sales to hurt.
I think they were saying something like they've sold like 11,000 or 11 million or... there's an 11 in
a
there.
Shockingly small number.
Yes. Where they were like, the Wii sold these many the first week.
Yep. Yeah. So the Wii U has been a very big disappointment. So this has been kind of a big question was, what's this going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. How do you bounce back?
And so the big question is, what is it? And is it awesome?
Yeah. How do you switch strategies?
So the video that if you the video if you want to see it where they demo it is going to be, there's going to be a link to it at the furloughbros.com website.
It's just /256.
/256.
That's what I heard.
I've heard about it.
I hear people say they watch the video on furloughbros.com/256. They say they really like it.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
Says it right here. See, crunch, crunch, crunch. Yeah, it says that. It says. Those ads are ridiculous.
I know.
I guess they work.
Yeah. Hey, man.
Otherwise, you wouldn't, right?
If it moves, well, sometimes people are really dumb. And sometimes they spend a lot of money. Because everybody else spends money that way, you feel like you have to, and so you do it, even though it doesn't actually necessarily work.
If I ever own a radio station, which I won't,
yeah,
I will ban those.
You're not legally allowed to.
I don't care. I will personally review them. This is why I won't own a radio station,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, you're not legally allowed to.
Well, let me put it this way. On our podcast, we will not run ads like that.
Yeah, How about that?
Can I
perfect
control over that?
Political ads where they just repeat themselves. Yeah, well, that's a big part of it. But it's interesting because political ads, like they a lot of times, yeah, there are legal requirements on how many and from what different sides. Like you have to give people equal airtime and stuff, specifically for like props and stuff like that. It's a fascinating. It's not fascinating at all, which is why I'm not going to go into it.
Probably more of a frustrating.
Yeah.
Anyways, Nintendo.
Yeah, so Nintendo built a new game system. It's not for sale, but yeah, it will be.
March.
Yeah.
Next year.
It's called the Nintendo Switch.
Switch.
It's pretty cool looking.
It's black.
For now. Yes.
That would change?
They always come out with like alternate color ones eventually. They start with the one color, and then if you're late to the game because you were waiting for an Arctic White version, you can buy that. So basically what it is it's a, if you watch the video, this kid's playing a Nintendo game with his gamepad, and it's plugged into the TV, and he's playing on the TV, which shouldn't seem shocking at all. It's just an old video game system, no big deal. And then everything gets crazy and switched up. And he walks up with his gamepad and he pulls off two pieces of it, specifically the pieces with buttons and joysticks, and he slides it onto the side of the, it looks like the console, and he picks it up and it's a screen playing the same game.
Looks like a PlayStation Vita.
A little bit. Or some might say a Wii U controller.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right. Which is what I think they're really going for. So you pull it out, and now you can play it.
How much hype.
Say. And then what gets even better is you walk out of your house with it, and you walk down you walk out in the field, and he's playing in the field, and then they have him, like, playing. They show a bunch of different use cases. Like, one is it's like a tablet where it's got controllers on it and everything, or the Wii U or the Vita. Then there's it's standing on it. He's on an airplane and it's standing on the airplane. It's like just sitting on the on the little tray table, and he removes the controllers and he just has the controllers in both hands.
Yeah.
So they're like the nunchuck for the Wii.
Yep.
And he's playing like that. They have
kickstands.
Exactly. They got a dual player mode where one person has one of the controllers, the other person has the other controller, which usually you use in concert for the games, but for dual player mode, you can separate them and play locally. And so it comes with two controllers. They've also got the ability to do like big co-op games over the internet. So like if everybody has their own system, you can play like Splatoon against each other. There was a bit of a focus on esports.
Saw that.
Yeah, they've even got, like, the third party, not the third party, but the pro controller, which is actually...
Looks nice.
Yeah, it's the exact same size and setup as the GameCube controller. They redesigned it for the Wii, and it seems to be the exact, like, same style as the Wii one, where the buttons are in the same place, the controller's in the same place. It's very similar, very reminiscent. So it's got kind of everything. One of the big concerns...
It has to work well. Microsoft feels vindicated.
Yeah, exactly. One of the big concerns was when you pull it out of the station that's plugged into your TV, mm-hmm. what happens to it? Like, is it... How much the graphics processing was coming from that base station? Well, it turns out, like, none.
Good question.
It's just HDMI output and
It's just a cradle.
And power. It's just a cradle. Huh. Like, the entire gaming system is that.
So, is it 4K?
No.
Probably not at all.
No. Definitely. Dude's Nintendo. And it's a tablet. I mean, it's... Which is kind of impressive, I mean, you think about it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Have you seen their graphics lately?
Well, see, that's the thing. Yes. It is kind of impressive because of the type of tablet it is.
Can you strap a cardboard to it and... Do VR?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
It could handle that. I mean, I'm sure that the software doesn't exist.
The screen probably can't, but the...
But the hardware can. It actually is the exact same not the exact same. It's a modified version of the Tegra chip that powered the NVIDIA Shield, which last year was NVIDIA's tour de force when it comes to, like, mobile gaming. That was the top of the line when it came to we want graphics performance for tablets, and this is how we're gonna beat the rest. So it's a pretty high end, like, performance processor. It's supported by NVIDIA. One of NVIDIA's biggest reasons why they failed with the Shield was because they couldn't get people to, like, rally around and they couldn't get developers to rally around and support it in a more unified way. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Nintendo actually has the ability to do that.
Yeah.
Come together. Also, interestingly, we made fun of the fact that it uses cartridges. Cartridges are just not the right word for it. They're just... They're proprietary... memory sticks. They're like little flash.
Does it use cartridges?
Yeah.
Oh.
But they're like flash drives that you plug in.
Oh, like with the camera things.
Yeah. It's exactly like that. They look a little bit different. They're proprietary, so you can't. But that's all they are. Is they're just, which totally makes sense. If you had,
like, Game Boy days.
Yeah, it's actually
smaller.
Precisely. And so all of the graphics power is held inside of this little thing. It's quite a bit of graphics power. They got, like, 48 different third-party developers that have pledged their support.
So can I watch Netflix on it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Probably. Right. You can watch Netflix on pretty much any Nintendo.
It's true. I'm just trying to think about third-party apps and stuff.
Yeah.
That'd be on it. Cast off the boy.
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, honestly, I'm not sure how much people care, but it's the other big thing that was really a big takeaway from this video that they showed was that everybody was 30-something-year-olds, like 20 to 30 years old. They're like,
oh, I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
Yeah, there were no kids.
No kids.
They got an audience that they're targeting.
Huh.
Young, grew up with Nintendo, have
so,
a little
so
bit of money.
So are you like, all right, so we've talked a little bit about it now. So two questions. Do you think that this is going to put them back on the map? And are you getting one? And maybe you have to answer them in each in a different order.
No.
All right, that was easy. So,
yeah. I like it a lot. I think it's an interesting...
Because you have a DS, right?
Yeah.
And you like it?
I like it.
Play it and
yeah, I do. Okay. Yeah, especially when I'm, like, flying and stuff. It's cool.
Okay, all right.
But
this is like a perfect next generation upgrade thingy.
It's big.
And you like the portable.
I like it a little more portable. That's not necessarily a no-go.
Okay.
But it's something to think about. Which is, it's a blessing and a curse. It's big. It's awesome and not awesome.
I like my iPad while traveling.
Exactly.
It's a game changer.
Mm, yeah, it's true. But so the so to me the big problem here is that that both Microsoft and Sony have changed their strategy for when it comes to consoles. What they've decided is they want to go with the Apple, the Android strategy, where you come out more regularly with an update to the system, to the ecosystem, slightly different design to the box, maybe an upgrade to the operating system, maybe, you know, upgrade to the hardware and stuff.
Yeah.
And then make your developers support the last three generation of consoles.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, so if you're coming out with a new system every 2 years, but if you buy a system, it will last 6 years, or you can buy two systems ago's console, and it won't last as long, but it only costs $150.
Yeah.
So you get the low-end price advantage, you get the absolute best performance every year after year after year, and you get the long life cycle that you want. It's a great strategy.
That's a good idea.
Well, and it's one of those things where it's like, everybody wins in that. If you're the person who always needs the best, that might be annoying, but you're an annoying person. Don't be like that. Just learn to be okay with occasionally you might have to skip a generation. But what you end up with
maybe it's like phones, right? Since they're still valuable, you can resell it.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's this real advantage to just coming out with the next, and it also helps where there are certain types of games or certain types of areas where platforms like the PC are really accelerating and growing and the console market isn't. And what this allows them to do is to compete with the computer market. Their value proposition is, we're controlled, closed garden. People really, you know, you can rely on us. Games will work on us. It's predictable hardware, predictable prices. So even though we're not as cutting edge as the PC market, we've got all those other advantages that the PC market doesn't. Well, now they're even taking away how far, because the worst part for like Sony and Microsoft was at the end of a 6 year cycle, they started out a year and a half behind the PC market. They're now a full 8 years to a decade behind. Yeah. And it's just the discrepancy is huge. And so they can keep that discrepancy small. And I look at what Nintendo is doing here. And I sit there and go, this is a neat little device, but it is a tablet that doesn't have all the features of a tablet. It's got proprietary software. That's the big thing. It's not going to be in 2 years. It's not going to be the best hardware. So to me, the question is, if they like this system that they have, and they start evolving it over time, keeping the hardware up to date, making sure their developers support multiple generations of system, sort of take those sorts of things, those other things that the other companies are doing, learn from them, and just keep this sort of slow like relentless growth. My problem is with Nintendo, my concern with Nintendo was they had the dual screen the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
They upgraded it to the Nintendo DS XL, which is pretty awesome. It's just a bigger screen. Same features, just a bigger screen.
Yeah.
And then they added, you know, they added 3D, they added this, they added that, and most of these things just kept growing it. So games that worked for the older systems still worked for the newer systems, and they were very, like...
So they did it.
Yeah. And then they came out with like this new generation of, they call it the new 3DS XL. It's literally called, that's the only difference. But it's got extra buttons, which is really cool if you get it and you get games that support it. But as a developer, you're now in a real hard spot of, so do I use these buttons? Because not very many people have it, and this limits how many devices I can be on. Like, they're just not great at that consistent long-term evolution. They like to make big changes and big jumps, so they sorry. So they launch a platform.
There's like creative people who get bored.
Exactly. So they launch a system that, if it's going to have a 5-year life cycle, is a great little system. But in 5 years, it's so far behind, and they start further behind than anybody because they tend to put underpowered stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I shrug my shoulders and I say, you know, if they come out with some good games, this will help, but this is not going to bring them back to where they were with the Wii or the Nintendo 64, which is where they want. They want to be the number one, number two. And I don't see it. I don't buy it. I don't think they can be there.
Well, it's funny. Obviously I haven't played with it at all.
Yeah.
The idea of being able to take it with me seems intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I'm only going to take it when traveling. I'm going to keep my phone with me under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put on the hat of a father, right? And like, all right, is this something that would be interesting to my daughter or my kids? She's going, I don't know. But it's funny, like, so again, you brought your PlayStation over, I've been playing it. Now, yes, I've been doing a lot of VR, but at the same time going like, dude, video games is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Well, Battle Zone. Battle Zone. The Battle Droid. The Battle Zone. I'm like, dude, this is fun with or without VR. I could already tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. And there's a part of me that's like, PlayStation looks cool. I can get behind it.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid argument. And I think if there's enough
price point, it's going to be interesting too.
I think it all comes into price. If you can afford both, I think Nintendo has a space to play.
Because $199, right? Like,
yeah, that's got to be the tops.
Because if they're going to charge $300, oh, okay, this is now.
Yeah, we got to get serious about it.
Thinking about it,
people, yeah.
I agree. About the success of smartphones, it was because the price point was $199.
Yeah.
And at that price, people go, yeah, I'll buy one, and I'll rebuy one every 2 years.
Right.
At $300, $400, okay, this is now an investment.
Right, and the only reason why smartphones were able to do that was because of subsidies.
Yeah.
So Nintendo's not going to have the subsidies, but...
Yeah, that's interesting.
I like it. I think a lot of people are saying it's what the Wii U should have been, and I would agree with that.
It's kind of their way of saying we're giving up on the console wars.
Yeah. Well, it's yes.
But they've lost, and I don't think there's any catching up.
Yeah.
I mean, they just
It's one of those things where this is about as good an execution as you can have on any of... This is what I like about it. For this particular strategy, we're going to have something that projects to your TV, but you can take with you. It's about as good as anything I've ever seen. Like, they're... You know, Apple and Android's best, like, way to do this is to get, like, a... He gives us some sort of a streaming device, like an Apple TV or the Chromecast,
yeah.
and then you have your phone that's like it's playing off of your phone, kind of it's mirroring off your phone, but there aren't really like good controllers and system.
Kill you.
Yeah, just as far as a gaming platform goes, man, this is as good an execution as I've seen anybody do for this particular style of mobile console hybrid.
Almost like for to work with like an Apple or Android phone, you would almost have to have, like you said, I'll just use Apple, but this could work for Android too. You got your iPhone mirroring or connected to an Apple TV, but you've got a controller that's Bluetooth connected to your iPhone.
Yeah.
And your phone's just sitting in your pocket and you're really using the control. It's, I don't know, it's the lack of buttons. The buttons, I think, are...
Yeah, it really is, and I think that's where the success of this system is, the necessity of buttons for gaming.
Well,
clearly
they've been successful with all their DSs.
Yeah,
and they're playing to that strength.
I'm gonna say, when I say, you know, you asked the question of this, is this gonna bring them back? Well, no, it won't bring them back. It'll just keep them going forward, which is awesome. Right. That's great. That's what we hope for. And not to mention the fact that their intellectual property is hugely valuable, and as long as they keep it locked onto that hardware, they're going to keep selling games.
Yeah, dude, they showed in part of the video, they showed the dude playing a Zelda game.
Yeah.
Where he's on a Pona and killing other bad guys, and I was like, that looks like fun.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing with the Wii U, is that nobody bought the Wii U because they were impressed with the hardware.
Yeah.
People bought the Wii because they were excited about the Wiimotes.
Yeah.
Nobody bought the Wii U because they were excited about the hardware. The only people who have bought the Wii U were excited about the games. And so if they can come out...
specifically the Mario game and the Zelda game.
Right. And it's... exactly. So if they can come out with those and deliver well on them, execute, you know, there's potential there for the company. And like I said, I think if the price point is low enough, they could actually have runaway success. If they can fit into this...
and not feel like they're encroaching upon Sony or Xbox.
Right. Let
them play their game. Hey. And they're gonna just play a different game.
So this is where the territory becomes really dangerous. If this works, why doesn't Nvidia double down on an Android-based system with buttons that has a, you know, why doesn't Samsung do it? If this works,
well, again, it comes back to that idea of why would you develop four buttons?
Well,
the majority of your phones don't.
That's what I mean. Is that what you would say is you'd come... Yeah, okay. Because you'd basically... You're saying, like... Honestly, what I was about to say is, you know, what if this opens them up? Because if they have success here, then competing companies can come out with their own platform that has buttons, that's a little bit closed, but also runs a native Android, and so has all the advantages of being a tablet... and a thing with which, but that's not bad news for Nintendo. That means that they've had a screaming success of a platform.
That's true.
And there's a bit of, you know, long term that could be an issue for Nintendo. But if Samsung were to come out with a competing product this year or, you know, early next year and be like, that's a pretty good idea, we'll do it too, that's good news because it just draws more attention and it legitimizes the idea. So,
and they still have better games.
And they still have Mario and Zelda. It's exciting. It's exciting to watch. It's definitely it's a strategy, man. And it's, you know, like I said, I don't know if this is a long term winning strategy. I don't know if it's a short term winning strategy. I think it's a middling strategy, but for this particular strategy, it's about as good as you could have done. They've given themselves all the right pieces to have success. Now the question is there a market there?
Yeah, and there's a couple things they said too, which we've said before, which is they literally have doubled the number of developers who are making games for this, and so hopefully they'll actually have some good games coming out too, because it's another killer. And so, yeah, we'll see. March.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens. But you know what would really hurt Nintendo, James? Actually, it would hurt everybody. But if the internet stopped working.
Oh, that'd be bad.
It would be bad.
The internet's important, I think.
It happened to us on Friday.
Did it?
Kinda. You didn't pay it? You didn't notice?
I didn't. I did not.
Why not?
I was... What was I doing?
Virtual reality.
I was. I mean, I was working really hard for HP. Yeah. What was I doing?
On Friday, we were all hanging out.
I noticed that I couldn't log in to my main HP page.
Really?
But I could log in. I had to fill out some employee evaluation stuff. I could log into that system.
Which makes sense, because it's a different... That actually... So, basically, what happened was...
I just assumed, like, something was going on, and I was like... Or something was going on the HP front, because that happens just enough.
That might be it, but... So, what happened was, there was a DDoS attack on DynDNS.
Is Dropbox
on Friday?
That?
Yes.
Because my Dropbox was working.
I don't know
either. Whatever.
So, there was an acronym attack on an acronym, and it caused the internet to fail. Exactly. So this is really fascinating, and I'll just lay out what occurred. So on Friday, a bunch of internet sites stopped working, and there were localized places where it wasn't working very well at all.
Huh.
Regionally, it wasn't working.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And it affected a bunch of different providers. Some companies like Netflix were intermediately affected. Some companies like Twitter, completely down, didn't work.
Of course, Twitter would be totally down.
So what happened was the DynDNS, the dynamic domain name servers, is what they're that stands for, stopped responding.
Oops.
So what happens is, this is how the internet works. You type google.com into your browser.
Yep.
And the google.com servers have an address that's a number. That number is their IP address, their internet protocol address. And so your computer doesn't know what the IP address of google.com is. You don't know what the IP of google.com is.
Should have done this with phone numbers.
Yes, exactly. So what happens is you, what your computer does know is the IP address of a domain name server. So what it does is it says, where's the domain name server closest to me? It sends out a message to the domain name server and says, hey, I'm looking for google.com. What is the IP address of google.com currently? The domain name server sends the IP address back, and then your computer makes a request to Google and says, hey, I want your Google homepage, and Google sends information back, right? Okay, so what happened was, there are actual domain name servers, but they can't handle all the traffic of the internet, so there have been these growing systems, one of which is called DynDNS, Dynamic Domain Name Server, and there are these servers that are dynamic and they're very fast, and for really big companies, it is an opportunity to get just to handle a tremendous amount of traffic, because it breaks things down locally, so it gets it closer to the people. Well, those servers came down on Friday, and the reason they came down on Friday is because they were getting a distributed denial of service request or attack. Which, what that is basically servers can only handle an X number of requests per second.
Yep.
If they get more requests than that, they start dropping requests. And they don't just drop the request behind them. They start getting confused and dropping tons of requests. And so these things just stop working if you can get it above X. Huh. And they did. Now,
who's they?
That's a big question.
We don't know. Russian hackers.
Yeah. it might be. But so what's the impressive part about this is that the domain name servers are designed to handle an enormous amount of traffic.
Yeah.
Like Google can handle a lot of traffic. The domain name servers are designed to handle more. Because the idea is that every single request for a website, when your little thing, when your iPhone sends a tweet and you don't open up the Twitter app, it first starts by sending a request to get the IP address of Twitter to the domain name server as and back. Like literally every single thing anybody ever does on the internet starts with going to the domain name servers. And so they can handle a lot. So to be able to overcome what they can handle is really, really difficult.
Huh.
And it's kind of a show of force if you do that. And this
someone's pretty forceful, huh?
Yeah.
How long was it out on? Was it like all day Friday?
And it's a couple hours, I think it was.
Is that the kind of thing where it self-corrects, or are there a bunch of scrambling engineers?
And so this is what probably happened. This is what I think, this is my guess. What we do know is where the distributed denial of service attack was coming from.
Okay.
I wasn't a culprit because my computer was off, but normally I'd be a culprit. It was all of your Internet of Things. They all have little processors on them.
Yeah.
They run on Linux.
Yeah.
And somebody had set up a botnet where they had taken over all these machines, and requests start coming from these to go somewhere. And a lot of times you use these as use it exactly for this, where they actually call it the low orbit ion cannon is one of your
sweet
versions of it, which for Command and Conquer fans, you'll be like, whoa, really? and they're designed literally to, you target a computer, you target a server, and you blow them up and you slow them down. And that's what that sort of a botnet is really good at. You can also use them for different stuff, like different types of hacking things. And But we have all these smart devices, and we know that it was a botnet specifically of web cameras and web, you know, and smart lights and stuff like that that did this. Chances are this was an accident. Chances are that what happened was whoever developed the software for this botnet, they introduced a bug somehow probably in the original software, and it just kept spreading and spreading, which was awesome. And then they tried to do something, and they accidentally activated the entire botnet. And just the vast amount of traffic that was generated in these things trying to do whatever it was they were doing all simultaneously took down the domain name servers. Yeah. Which has actually been one of the biggest concerns of botnets since they've really started growing to enormous sizes, is if whoever's controlling them doesn't control them properly, you can just knock out the domain name servers. Like, this is it's one of the reasons why they invented the dynamic domain name servers, because if the main ones went down, the dynamic ones could be dynamic and deal with that failure. So there's some pretty big questions going on, and I think we're just at the very beginning of, hey, what does this mean? What happened? How are we going to deal with this? I think over the next couple of months, we'll get more and more information, and probably in 2 or 3 years, we'll get a really interesting and long book written about it.
Yeah.
I think what happened on Friday was huge for software engineers and network engineers and stuff.
Okay.
But
okay. Wow.
It's just hard to know exactly what the extent of it was. And
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Huh.
I made it interesting because it can be a bit dry and confusing.
Yeah. No, I didn't know. I missed it. Man. Kind of upset.
We could have been a part of it, James.
Ah, jeez. Just trying to think of what I was doing.
You're hanging out with me.
Normally I'd be all over that.
I know.
Yeah, I guess you were here, huh? I had a meeting in the morning, which did not involve the internet. And I was just filling out the reviews. I did some email. Weird.
Working hard for the man.
Whatever.
You're a founder. You don't have to answer to anybody, James.
That's true. Well.
Except for the people that are laying people off. You might have to answer to them. Yeah.
Okay, I really want to know what FPGA is.
So the
first person Galaxy Assistant.
Yeah, no. So we actually talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
I'm
glad you were paying attention. This is a field programmable gate array. Microsoft, this is the only reason why I wanted to bring this up, is because we talked about this a while back. They're programmable computer chips, not as like all computer chips are programmable, ideally. These are like you can create new computer chips with this one type of computer chip. It's actually how you prototype computer chips.
Okay.
But it also allows you to prototype all sorts of other things. That's what they've always been used for. It has become more common, and Microsoft has been a big pusher of this, to use them in production so that you can create entire servers of these things, and then if you decide you want a different type of processor, you just reprogram them all, and now you have this new type of processor.
Cool.
Turns out Apple put one in the iPhones.
Oh.
Nobody has any idea why.
So you could have a chip so this could be like the Tesla moment, where, so we've had this thing in here, yeah, we know it's been doing X, but now it's going to do X plus Y.
Right. And nobody really knows what it's doing anyways. Which is pretty awesome. So they've decided they wanted to do some sort of hardware acceleration with their software, but they are not exactly sure what, so they just started building them in iPhones, and now they'll be able to retroactively go and change that.
Huh.
And
just gives them more flexibility.
Yeah, pretty cool. I suspect that most of these field programmable gate arrays are being used heavily with artificial intelligence.
Oh.
I suspect that that's why Apple put it in there. Especially because they're just getting started, and they're afraid that they might come up with some cool new software that would be huge, but their 4-year-old phone won't be able to support it, so they can't introduce it. And I think they're afraid that they're going to lag behind other companies with artificial intelligence, augmented reality, and this is sort of their way of future-proofing against it. It's pretty clever. It's pretty exciting.
That is clever.
I wish I had one. Aww.
So I want to finish this up.
Cool.
We just got one more story for the day.
Let's do it.
It's a startup. They're called Hire Me. And I really brought them up for totally selfish reasons, so just go with me on it.
Okay.
They help you hire hourly workers.
Ooh.
Is the idea. I've hired people before to help me do like apartment rehab projects. They help me. I hired people to help me rehab my last house. I don't think this is who Hire Me is targeting. Day laborers. But the idea is that they just think they can do a better job of helping you find solid employees, and so this got me thinking. So I'm tapping this feverishly as I am. So one of them is they tell you stop posting on Craigslist. They'll find a candidate for you, which
ooh.
I know a lot of people, but that's what they do. They post on Craigslist looking for someone awesome.
My boss complains about Craigslist. Every time we talk about hiring somebody new, especially for temporary work, he hates Craigslist. Because he'll be explicit about what the requirements and goals are. And and
we both just stood up. That's why I was laughing. I can stand too.
And he will get inundated with people that he like, because it's like he wants electronics background, willing to do temporary work full time for a couple of months, and he'll get a bunch of people coming in like, "Oh, my job experience. I just graduated high school. I've been working at Jack in the Box for 2 years. Can I get a job?" And you're like, yeah, he's just like. He's like, I'll get 200 applicants the next day. Not one of them qualified. He's like, what is
awesome.
Going on? Yeah.
Awesome.
So something to help with that would be, especially hourly labor like this.
That's what
I'm going
is.
To recommend this to.
Yeah, so it's Hire Me, and it's H-I-G-H-E-R.
H-I-G-H.
Not the normal way you would spell hire when it comes to bringing people on board. It's more like, I can jump higher than you.
You know, I was going to make a marijuana joke, and I probably should have in retrospect, if that's how you spell it.
yeah, that's another good way to... Yeah. Anyways, Hire Me. You just know that the other domain name was taken. Anyways.
Yeah, right.
that's how that works.
Yeah.
They'll ask them... how do I say it? Like, they'll actually do the screening for you as well, so you can tell them what your criteria is, and they'll... do that for you.
Oh, nice.
Which is nice. And then they tell you better applicants means lower turnover, quicker hiring, you save money and time. Blah, blah, blah. Yay. I have no idea what the charge to do it. I couldn't figure it out, and I didn't really feel like contacting
Which is really the advantage that Craigslist has.
Yeah.
No financial...
Though, one would argue that your boss's time is worth something. And...
Somebody might argue it.
Somebody might. I don't know what he would. But, you know, if he's the one who's wading through those 200 resumes.
Yeah, no.
Right? That's the idea.
Yeah. I would. I actually, for my boss, that does seem ideal because that is exactly the sort of. This is, sounds exactly the sort of thing where it's like he fits that category. He's not. If it improves the business, he's not afraid to spend money on it. Getting hourly employees can be very difficult, especially if it's temporary work.
Yeah.
And there just aren't a lot of great... interesting.
So here's the... there was two features that I wanted to key on.
Okay.
First one is there's a text to apply. So someone can see your thing and text you to apply, which might be a little weird, but whatever. But then here's the really cool one. Video cover letters. So applicants can record a short video and helping you get a sense for their personality and whether they're serious about wanting the job. Which I was like, that's funny that they would say that. But here's the thing. In the landlording...
That is such a good idea.
What?
That's the worst part of applying to jobs, I've always felt, has been cover letters. Because it's like, I want to say something about the company. I want to share my enthusiasm for the company.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend 7 hours writing this thing, but if I just give you like a form cover letter, like it won't be, this is awesome, and then it's like I can sit there and think about what I'm going to say, maybe take some notes, and then like record it, watch it, and be like, oh yeah, that's good, send it off.
Wouldn't it be nice too if you as a company could say, answer these three questions?
Yeah.
One of them would be like, just recap your skills for me, like what do you think is the most important thing on your resume? Why do you want to work here?
And then HireMe can transcribe that for you. Just get a little software to do some automatic transcribing, so you can like actually parse it for real like answers and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, James, this is a good idea.
So clearly your boss is gonna love it. But again, as a landlord,
okay,
like,
sorry.
The way that we, I'm trying to be selfish here. The way that we, but I like where we're headed with this. We actually think about new tenants as like hiring employees.
Interesting.
Because there's a lot of parallels where it's this idea of you're entering a contractual relationship with this person. They pay me instead of me paying them.
Yeah.
But like an employee, I also have certain expectations of behavior for them
right.
to stay employed, essentially.
Well, you give your boss your time resource in return for their money resource. You've just reversed that. They're giving you their money resource
and their time resource
for your property resource.
Well, yeah, but the idea is,
I see what you're saying. I was just trying to generalize the relationship.
It's
you're exchanging resources, but
yes.
they also have. Yes. But there's all. But it's not a finite one. Like I'm paying you for a donut.
Right, but it's even like with an employee, you tell them. This is your job,
right?
You're doing some activity regularly, either, you know, whatever. Whereas even in the landlording business, it's that same concept of, I'm giving you a job of, quote, taking care of the property. There are certain things you should and shouldn't do. You should always lock your door. You should leave the fire alarms alone. You should clean regularly. You know, if you see a problem, tell me about it.
Mm.
Right? Those are like, that's the exact same conversation, ideally, with a tenant as it is with an employee. And when you think about it that way, you suddenly approach things a little bit differently. Like one of the things they talk about is you don't spend 15 minutes training your employee and then say, good luck with your job. They're like, no, spend an hour telling them and showing them what to do. Like, walk them through, here's how you do these things.
Right.
So anyways, one of the things that we've been slowly doing in our business is we've been automating more and more and more of the finding the tenant process. So like when someone applies, yeah, I do it on Craigslist, and yeah, I get a bazillion phone calls. But I talk to each of them on the phone, and I have a whole list of questions. And by the time I'm done with them on the phone, for the most part, I know who they are. In the ad itself, I post a ton of different pictures. And I've even started this idea of like, oh, what if I could take 360-degree videos? And you know, I walk around, get the video, they could throw on some VR or do it on their phone or whatever, and they could literally see inside this apartment while I'm, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But then there's also like, and now, so when they pay online. Because when we accept someone, we tell them, sign up for the service now. Because we're going to sign in 3 days, and it takes 3 days for you to get going. And so I literally will sit there, and I'll go, and I'll help you do it the first time, because I found that super valuable to walk through with them, so they know, oh, yeah, here's how you pay, and then from then on, they pay online. Now, we sign everything digitally. I've got a nice little Apple Pencil. We literally will sit there. We sign it all out. We could do a DocuSign type of thing. And Dropbox has now actually just enabled a new way to digitally sign stuff.
Nice.
So, there's certain things where I'm like, man, we're getting pretty close to never having to actually talk to each other. But, the other thing is when they apply online. We don't accept, I mean, I guess we will, but when someone checks out a property, we literally tell them, go to this URL. Just furlough.com/apply.
Nice.
And click the link, and you're off from there. And so, like, we don't interact with them again to get it. And so we've been constantly trying to figure out, so now this weird part happens where someone sees an ad on Craigslist. They see a lot of photos. They know what the place looks like. They talk to me on the phone for 10, 15 minutes. And then what we do is we set an appointment for them to go through and walk through it. The walkthrough, it lasts somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes. Because they walk in and go, oh yeah, it looks just like the pictures. Cool, how do I apply? And I hand them literally a business card. It's a cute little business card with a key on it that has the URL on it. And I go, you go here.
It's obnoxiously cute.
It is. And then, like, that's it. And so I find myself going, how do I get rid of that 5 to 10 minute piece? Because I have to drive a half hour to get there.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And so I saw this and I was like, oh man, especially the video cover letters, just trying to figure out, like, how do you screen somebody without screening somebody? And I feel so close. Where I'm literally like, I can figure out this last part. I would not have to talk to anybody, and I could almost buy any property anywhere in the world.
Okay. See, that was the last piece that... Okay.
I could have a virtual assistant do it all for me.
Okay, so there's still the problem of... Okay. All right. So, how would you... Let's hypothetical this.
And I'm looking at hiring me going, probably not appropriate for landlords, but the concept is there.
Yeah, I gotcha. I feel what you're saying. I still think you have this issue of, like, I wouldn't want to start renting. Even if I had, okay, hypothetically, you create a 360-degree virtual model of the home.
Yeah.
So I can put on an HTC Vive and literally walk through the home.
Yeah,
I can see it, at every level, and I can feel very comfortable about it. I'm trying to move across town, so it's a 15-minute drive for me. It's not super annoying, but I could go there, see the neighborhood, smell the carpets, hear how squeaky the things are.
Yeah.
There's still an issue there for me.
For me, it's like if I start the video out on the street, you can let Google Street View do take care of everything out on the street, and then I could literally walk you in and walk through. But I don't know how to do the smell vision thing. I don't know how important that is. Or the sounds.
I bring those up just to say, not to say that those things are necessarily.
There's something to be said about the tactile.
Yeah. Well, it's just that you can't fake it. It's I get to use my own 7 senses, and I don't know why, but I felt.
What extra senses are we using here?
So I was like, it's your VR gyroscopic senses. Those are the ones that actually make you motion sick. It's when the senses that aren't normally included in the 5 senses are out of sync with the senses in the 5 senses. That's when you get motion sickness. But, sorry.
There's part of me, too, that's okay. Maybe if I put a keypad on the door with a temporary code, like with my door that I have right now, the August, right?
Yeah.
I could put that on a door and go, here's the code to get in, walk through. And if I had a drop cam or something like that, so I could be watching to make sure there's no squatters. But I have a temporary something, I'm sure. I don't know. I'm like, I see companies like hire me. I'm like, for business stuff, perfect. But
can you have like a robotic drone? It just like flies in. I'm trying to think. I'm going to think about this.
Oh, what if it was like the Rolly robot thing?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm on an iPad. Hi, how's it going? Let me give you a tour. I was too lazy to drive a half hour to meet you.
I like it. I think that I guess what my point is, or what I'll say is this: from a what you need to know information, this seems great. It does seem like you can go even further down the road of I don't need to be there. There's no reason for me to be there. I can learn everything I need to know about this person from afar. To me, the big question becomes, okay, what do you do? Like, I feel like you're still there's still a need for a person to go there.
To press the palms.
To shake the hands, to open the door, and say...
You're so old school.
Yep.
The olden days.
I know, right? Well, see, now this is the trick. How do you get somebody to do that job for you who's not a permanent, fixture? It's like you're going to need somebody to take care of, if you. I'm thinking of the countries on the house on the other side of the country. Probably.
Yeah. So there's a property out there, $20,000 that I could buy.
Right. You like Portland. You live in Oregon, but you like Maine, and you want to start buying houses out in Maine, or you want to move back to the Bay Area, but you don't want to sell your properties up here.
Yeah, that's a great example.
How do you do? It's the home management aspect of it. How do you create a home management company that? Because right now you do your own home management. How do you make your home management company global with very, very, very few people or no people there? What if a window breaks? What if
something solvable? Because that is like I had a situation where a drain got clogged.
Yeah.
And I literally called up Roto-Rooter and said, here's my tenant's contact information. Here's my billing information. Let me know when it's done.
So, okay. So
and I got a bill in the mail. And so the tenant was like, it's all fixed, thanks.
So, okay. How do you get a person to be the face of Furla Rose? Not Furla Rose. I'll be the face of Furla Rose. No, but like, how do you get somebody who's there who can just be the person who stands in the apartment with them and says, yeah, I'm just making sure you don't set the place on fire or whatever, you know, like how do you do that?
Do you need that? I mean, it sounds like you're saying yes.
I think so. I think that there is value in that 15 minutes of a person being there. It doesn't need to be you. It just needs to be an official representative of you.
That's true. Yeah, and I mean, I've gotten pretty good at, like, at least right now, the market's super hot.
Yeah.
So I'll put an ad up on Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, I'm scheduling everything on Saturday. And it's like, and if you can't make Saturday, bummer, I'm probably not going to rent to you. But usually what happens is, and they all get it, is I'll field 20 phone calls Friday afternoon, and then I'll take the ad off because I'll have 7 to 8 walkthroughs scheduled, and I'll literally go 2:15, 2:30, 2:45, 3. So I'll be there for a couple hours and have 8 people walk through.
Yeah.
And that's usually how I do it, and it just is what it is. And then usually what happens is, by the time that last person walked through, I already have 4 applications turned in because I can see it all online.
Yeah.
and then that last person, I'm like, I'm not going to rent to you. No offense, but I already talked to those 4 people who already applied. I already know they're good to go, and I do it in the order in which I receive the applications. So I'm just like, I feel like I'm wasting my time now.
Yeah. This person's looking for a place to live, looking for a way to survive, and you're like, oh, you're such a waste of time to me, God.
So bad.
So, but it's okay. So the last mile problem. This is what we're dealing.
What this is.
The last mile is, and this is going to be the hypothetical, incredibly difficult situation. But if you could solve this, you can solve any of them. You buy one house in the middle of Oklahoma. How do you do the face-to-face representative opens the house for people who are going to rent it?
And you think that you need a representative to open a house?
Not necessarily. I just think that that's that last...
Again, if I can install a keypad...
Let me see.
So what I really liked about the hire me thing, and again, maybe I'll come back to this, was the idea of the video cover letter.
Yeah.
To go, what if we have our phone conversation and I say, let's do a video, either you send me a video or I'll send you a video. Like, what if part of that walkthrough video that we create, like, I'm on the screen showing it, and I'm pointing out different features and saying this, so they see me, and what if they send me a video cover letter? And so, like, does that count for enough of a whatever? And then when I'm talking to them on the phone, they go, hey, it's the same voice as the guy I saw on the video. And I go, here's the code so you can get in, so you can check it out. And I've got it, and I've got a log of, they checked in or checked out, just like I have with my August. Like, when you type in your code, I've got a little, hey, Matthew's here, And so could you have something like that? And I don't know, because that was what Hire Me was doing. I was like, man, the video cover letter is a brilliant idea. I
I'd have to think about it. I'd have to think about it. Because I think that I think there's something to be said for a bunch of pictures and even a 360 you can move around the apartment and look at the apartment.
The future is VR.
You just live on the streets and have a VR home on the street and you feel great about it. We'll have to work on the smell-o-vision still. But but I do wonder, like, I sit there and I go, I think for a certain number of people, especially as time goes on and it becomes more familiar, that will be fine. That is good enough. You can just unlock the house when they're, you know, honestly, you can tell them, like, I'm not available. We have a 360 walkthrough. If you want to check out the neighborhood, you can drive by the place. But as soon as we get accepted, I'll just give you the code. That'll unlock the doors. The keys are inside.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like the neighborhood. My argument of, oh, I want to know the neighborhood, what's stopping you from knowing the neighborhood? You can just go and check out the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
well, I know. Sometimes we have people, just because of the nature of the city we live in, like, they live somewhere else around the country.
Yeah.
They come to school. And, you know, and so for them, we've actually done some video stuff with them, and we'll do a video meet and greet.
Right. Which is, I think that's, to me, so it really is.
But we also don't, we wait until they get here to sign all the paperwork.
Yeah.
It's not a done deal until we meet you, but
so the, anyways. So the last piece, so I still think the hard part is letting somebody in the house, and I think there is an advantage to having an actual human being there.
Mm.
I think that, and maybe the answer is this.
So the world's not ready yet.
That maybe the answer is this. There is a certain percentage of the population who will never acquiesce to that requirement. You're not allowed in the house until you rent it. You'll have an incredibly high resolution, accurate representation of it. You'll have a bunch of pictures. You'll know all the amenities. You'll know the state of the place. You're allowed to go to the neighborhood and check it out. But you're not going to be able to go inside until we say yes and you pay us rent. There might be a certain part of the population that will say, nah, it's not good enough for me. But there might be another, you know, if you explain why that is, like, there's just nobody available or whatever, I don't know, or we don't think it's valid, whatever. But I guess what my point is, I do, maybe the thing is 30% of the population would never do that.
Mm.
But there's still 70% of the population that would.
Yeah.
And if 50% of that population would pass your criteria to rent from you, then you're still talking about a pretty large chunk of people who meet those criteria. You know what? I got an answer for you, James.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Try it out. Experiment with it. Just see if it would work. See if anybody would, you know, if you'd find that nobody would be willing to do it, then I think you know your answer. You're going to have to get somebody to be your...
Experimenting.
I know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. All right. Well, so hire me's got me thinking about it. This is my current problem. Yeah. It's not a problem.
Hire me.
Fantastic problem.
We've advertised for you, even though we don't actually care about your product that much.
We didn't care. You said it was great for your boss. Right. And
I might tell him about it. I don't know.
You're horrible. Sweet. Well, everybody, that's what we got for the day. Thanks for listening. We're totally thankful and grateful for it. If you haven't figured out what podcast episode this is yet, it's 265.
I thought it was /265.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's brotherbros.com/265.
Yeah.
What was it again? I can't remember. Anyways, because that's where all the show notes are. And if you would like to get them sent directly to you, dude, sign up for email. Just get it done.
Yeah.
We'll send you the show notes. Sure. On occasion, there may be other words of encouragement that come your way, but it will always be relevant. So far, that hasn't happened, but trust me. Good. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. Again, I want to Dave. He is a supporter of this podcast, and he got to play with a VR headset with us probably before you listener out there. So there you go. There's some benefits to that, and we have four different levels. We got fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens, and they all have their own levels of rewards. So you can check that out as well at photobros.com. All right. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah. I am James Furlow, and my brother, who is once again 3 years behind me, is Matthew Furlow. His birthday happens before mine in the calendar year.
It's true.
Anyways, that guy. We will talk next time.
Thank you.